in God's name do you need a solvent for except to kill someone?
That's an outrageous slur.
Google it, mate.
The only way that you can preserve peace is to prepare for war.
Views on News with Mark Latham. Mark Latham. Mark Latham.
It's that time each and every Thursday afternoon when we look forward to chatting to the leader of One Nation in New South Wales, Mark Latham. He joins me on the phone. Hello, Mark.
Friend, how are you going? Good to be with you.
I'm good, mate. How are you?
Oh, yeah, pretty good in here at State Parliament House doing a bit of research. It was supposed to be a parliamentary sitting day, but the passing of the Queen meant the suspension of Parliament, so we've got a bit of time to catch up on our research and come back for the full condolence motions for the late Her Majesty on Tuesday.
Yes, the body of the Queen left Buckingham Palace, which was her home for the past 8 decades. I thought about that last night when I was watching at about 11:30, and they say that this is the final time that the Queen will leave Buckingham Palace. Of course, it was on way to lie in state at Westminster, where hundreds of thousands of mourners will pay their respects over the next 4 days. Thousands of people from 2 a.m. our time, 5 p.m. London time, began filing past the late Queen's coffin. Incredible how the Poms do, the pomp and pageantry, Mark. They do a magnificent job, don't they?
They do, but they've also planned this out. Her operation was known as London Bridge for the passing of the Queen, so it's been planned out probably for decades, and it's a fitting tribute and, you know, huge moments of national mourning for someone who served their country with amazing distinction. I was thinking about it this morning that we know her as the Queen who was basically flawless over 7 decades, but you go back in history, it was never a job she sought or wanted, and only by kind of an accident of history did she ever get it, because her uncle David, the Prince of Wales, subsequently Edward VIII, who abdicated, then the Duke of Windsor, had the job, but fell in love with Wallis Simpson, the American who was divorced twice, and at those times in the mid-1930s he couldn't take the role of king plus be married to a divorcee, so he abdicated, and the Queen's father got the job, passed away at a young age, relatively young age, and he didn't have a son. She was the oldest daughter, and legend has it that even among the two daughters, Elizabeth and Margaret, in their discussions in their childhood, knowing one of them would be the next monarch, they thought Margaret was better suited because she was more outward going and, you know, in the public eye, and subsequently very flamboyant in her adult years, to put it kindly. So Elizabeth was kind of an accidental, reluctant monarch, but what a magnificent job she did from that unusual background. 7 decades of service, her life was her job, the job was her life, and all this grief and mourning now and love for her is a great expression of the high regard with which she was held right across the Commonwealth.
I heard a story this morning from someone that worked for her. I think it was Dickie Arbiter, who worked for her for 12 years as her press secretary, and they were having a barbecue at one of the homes, and there was no help to clean up. So he thought, well, I'll go into the kitchen and I'll start to do the dishes. So he went into the kitchen and he cleaned up, and he's standing at the sink and he hears someone coming in behind him, and he thinks it's the lady in waiting coming in to give him a hand, and so he didn't turn around. He just said, I'll do the dishes, you do the drying. And he said there was a hesitation, and this voice came back and said, I'll do the dishes, you do the drying. And he said it was the Queen. So he said there the Queen and I stood at the sink cleaning up after the lunch, which just goes to show, you know, she was just an everyday person in an extraordinary world and an extraordinary job.
That's a great summary of it. An ordinary person in an extraordinary job. And it may well be, in the nature of the royal family, what we know of the subsequent generation, she might be remembered as the last of the normal royals. I always thought, well, she must be a normal person because she loves horse racing. That was her major sporting passion. And it's a great Australian pastime, the track. So she had that characteristic that we could relate to in our great horse racing nation, the Melbourne Cup, and so forth. Not many countries have a race that stops the nation. So you look at the subsequent generations, Prince Charles, now the King, who once said he talks to plants, and he's got all these, you know, left-wing political ideas about the world ending with climate change. And then there's Harry and Meghan, the less said there, the better. William and the wokeness. I mean, The Queen stayed out of politics, even though she was in the era of mass media, and I think that was to her advantage, that everyone could relate to her. But once you get into politics in those jobs, you'll burn off half the population who don't agree with that political perspective. So how it plays out for King Charles III, we'll have to wait and see. But the more political he is in the future, as he has been in the past, the more divisive and less popular he'll be.
The Republic, of course, Peter Fitzsimons and Adam Bandt, on Friday, the very day that the Queen died, they couldn't wait to start pushing their barrow for the Republican movement. But in surveys that I have seen that have been done in recent days, it seems as though the push for the Republic has been put on the back burner. I know that the Prime Minister has said there will not be a referendum in his first term, but the survey that I looked at the other day said that at the moment, 60% of Australians wish to continue with the monarchy.
Well, it's disrespectful on the day of the Queen's death to be talking about getting rid of the monarchy in Australia. The monarch has just died, and Fitzsimons and Bandt just showed how out of touch they are with public sentiment, which is a very bad sign for the Republican movement. If you can't read the room, you've got no chance of getting a referendum up in the future, which requires a majority of voters and a majority of states to support the proposition. So I come at this as a Republican, but also recognising that in the hands of Bandt and Fitzsimons, this is a generation away, at least, that these clowns have sullied the moment of the Queen's passing, have worked politics into it, and quite frankly, they can't agree on a model. Fitzsimons had this silly idea that you can't trust the people to just have nominations for a new president and we'll all have a vote. Every parliament, state parliament, will get to nominate a presidential candidate. Well, people aren't going to trust the politicians to nominate any of these people. So they can't agree on a sensible model. They can't trust the people. They can't respect the passing of the Queen. And, King Charles would have to really, really stuff up, I think, to put the likes of Fitzsimons, the Red Pirate, back in the game for his Republican push.
Gee, I tell you, I said only this afternoon because we've had another story, which you'd probably be across in reference to comments that Pauline Hanson has made about this Farugi woman, Maureen Farugi, and the comments that she has made and what Pauline Hanson said. We were talking about that this afternoon. So there's her, there's the leader of the Greens, there's also the Newcastle Knights young girl, the footballer that came out and just despicable and disgusting tweets that you would think... any time you make a negative comment about this, Mark, you get the people ringing or texting or emailing saying, yes, but what about free speech in this country? And my comeback is, yes, well, there is free speech in this country, but, you know, there's a right way and a wrong way to say and get your point across.
Yeah, well, there's also respect for the dead and respect for those loved ones that the Queen has left behind and all those people around the world who never met her but loved her and admired her and respected her. So, you know, respect goes a long way when someone has died. And, you know, my old mum always had a rule, if you can't say anything nice about someone who's just passed away, don't say anything at all. Talking is optional. And, you know, I'm a bit of a talker and straight talker and believe in free speech, but I've got to say, for all my faults over the years, I've never once jumped in to rubbish someone who's just passed away. And that's just a basic human respect for the people who love them, their family, their friends, those close to them who are mourning. When you've just lost, you know, your mother, your grandmother, your great-grandmother, someone of the stature of the Queen, and you're feeling down about it, do you really want to hear these political galahs bagging her? I mean, the whole notion of it is just appalling.
It is, and I'm pleased to see that, you know, at least Fitzsimons and Bandt didn't bag the Queen. I mean, they were both complimentary to the Queen and her service. It's these other idiots that thought they'd get stuck into the Queen. But, you know, I suppose it says...
Yeah, but the Republican theory has always been the reason they couldn't resist, and Fitzsimons had to jump in instead of saying nothing and respectfully leaving it for a month or so.
I agree.
The reason he had to jump in, they're all excited, Brent, I can tell you, because the theory's always been Australia can never be a republic as long as the Queen was alive, but when Charlie gets the job, that's a different proposition. Nobody really likes him, Diana, Camilla, on it goes. We'll strike at that moment. And that's that's why they've jumped into this, and they're all excited about it. How it plays out, we don't really know, but probably the biggest enemy of the Republic is Fitzsimons himself.
Well, this is a continuation of our discussion about this, because Fitzsimons was there was an article written about him and his comments about the $5 note yesterday, I think it was.
Same thing. Same thing. Why the rush to take the Queen off the $5 note? Wouldn't you just say, out of respect, and her amazing 70 years of service? We'll talk about this a year from now.
Yeah, I agree.
Wouldn't you? I mean, like, I don't really, beforehand, I'm not an expert on who's on the Australian currency. I haven't got enough of it in my pocket, quite frankly. But if the Queen's on the $5 note, and she's been there obviously for ages, and before that I think the $1 note I read this morning, well, just leave it, let it go for a year. You know, it's not a big issue of national importance, but it just reflects how excited the likes of Fitzsimons are about the passing of the Queen. I just think that's basically wrong, because he thinks King Charles is the weak link, and the moment has arrived for the Republicans. But I've got to say, on the early evidence, they're already messing it up.
I said yesterday or the day before, I mean, in respect to the wonderful job and the long reign that the Queen had, leave her on the $5 note. Leave her on the $5 note forever, with the respect of the job and the life that she lived. And yes, as we go, let's change the coins and put King Charles III, his head on the back of all the coins. But, you know, that's an option. You don't need to change.
Yeah, well, that's a good option as well. Maybe there's an argument to say a couple of years from now, we've marked all our respect to the Queen, and they might want to say, what about meritorious Australians who deserve to be on there? Bob Hawke, Bob Menzies.
True.
We haven't done much in this country, unlike the Americans, to honour our great political leaders. John Curtin, who led us and saved us through World War II. I mean, the Americans honour Washington, Jefferson, Lincoln, Roosevelt, and on it goes. We don't do much in this country. So that's my assessment, but only after a long, long period of respect.
To the economy now, and the way Reserve Bank Governor Philip Lowe and his board prepared Australians for swings in interest rates is going to be a key element in an independent review that will also canvass how the institution deals with future pandemics and shocks to global chains. Mark, do you think this review is actually going to get anything of it out of it worthwhile?
Well, the best thing would be the resignation of Philip Lowe, who didn't prepare Australians for swings in interest rates. He said there wouldn't be any change in the interest rates until 2024. So he was ruling them out for this year and next. And this is a huge failing. It's damaged a lot of businesses, a lot of households who were planning their finances around the word of the Governor of Reserve Bank. And if you get it so badly wrong, and interest rates obviously going up every month now at a very fast and large rate, well, you've got to be responsible for that. So I think the review will be damning of the leadership of Philip Lowe, his massive failings in getting it hopelessly wrong. As I've said previously, if you didn't see inflation coming at the end of last year, you weren't looking.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't looking. He's one of the very few economists who've got it so wrong, and he's got to pay a price for that. And I think they've got to strap around the next governor of the Reserve Bank a lot better advice. Forget about the woke politics they practice inside that organisation, and just stick to sound, reliable, dependable economics.
What is your thoughts on the price, the fuel excise being put back on, so fuel will go up 25 cents a litre come the end of September? Look, the coalition government, they were going to do exactly what, you know, Anthony Albanese's government is continuing to do. Do you think they should have delayed it and let it go a little longer, Mark?
Well, Brent, I think the overriding responsibility is to recognise that Australia can't live with $1 trillion of debt forever. I mean, at some point, governments, and this is an election promise, just to let the concession fade away, to expire, at some point, a government's got to make some hard decisions about getting the budget back into surplus and paying down debt. If you want to do something about inflation and rising interest rates, you can't do it through big budget deficits that overstimulate the economy. In New South Wales, for instance, we've got $192 billion of debt now, and the interest on that, the interest payments on that, are more than we pay for funding the police or TAFE in New South Wales. So the interest bill alone at state level is huge. At Commonwealth level, it's astronomical. And at some point, governments have got to start to say it's time to wind back the deficits. That's good for bringing down inflation, stabilising interest rates, and that's got to be the medium-term economic objective.
Last but not least, before I let you go, the Productivity Commission report examined the extent to which policy initiatives under the National School Reform Agreement made in 2018 by state and federal education ministers had helped student outcomes. I see one of them was the fact that kids still wag school. Nothing changes, huh?
Well, yeah, I was out there in Western New South Wales where at Walgett High School, which is a disaster, unfortunately, only 3% of the students attend the school 90% of the time.
Gosh.
Now, on some days, over 50% of the students are truants.
Right.
That just shows you the scale of the problem. And the Productivity Commission, it's a huge issue for the country. The Productivity Commission has found, despite the billions of dollars extra being spent on Gonski funding, if you're a disadvantaged person at a disadvantaged school, you'll stay disadvantaged. That schools aren't lifting people out of poverty and breaking the cycle generation to generation. It's a huge issue. And the Education Minister federally, Jason Clare, has said, oh, it's a problem with the funding allocations. Brent, I have been to disadvantaged schools where they've got so much Gonski funding, these rivers of gold, they don't know how to spend it. They literally don't know how to spend it inside the school. So I can assure you, it's not a paucity of funding in these schools. It's parents who aren't sending their kids to school, aren't caring about education, aren't valuing the importance of homework and excellence and results and qualifications to get their children a good career, and faulty teaching methods, where a lot of these schools, they it's too hard to get the results, we'll go for pastoral care or well-being. As long as these kids are happy, that's our objective. Well, look, it's good to be happy, but happiness has never got anyone a job or lifted you out of poverty. So we've got to think long and hard about the failings of these schools and do a lot better for kids who desperately need a better school education.
Well said. It's always great to catch up with you. Thank you for your time. We'll talk next Thursday. It's a different time, if you can help me out next Thursday. And I think it's for 3 weeks. I'm filling in for Lawsy, 9 to 12.
Oh, okay, so earlier in the day. Well, it's the public holiday, but
someone said
the Parliament
will
be sitting.
No.
But if you want me, I'll be there any time of day, so let me know what time of day. And Brent, good luck with your Rabbits against the Sharks this weekend.
Yes, very
fantastic.
True.
Fantastic. How good's the footy at the moment? I hope they have a dig again. That was a great game, beating the Roosters.
It was a good game, wasn't it? Yeah.
You know, I love the passion when they fire up in rugby league. And for the fans, they can't get enough.
We'll keep our fingers crossed for the Bunnies on Saturday night. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you.
Good on you, Mark. Bye-bye.